gonna happen, so shuts. Anyway. Yeah, glad you're here.
That's the one I want.
Okay, so these personality traits, utilitarian, pragmatist, and faithful. This pragmatist is they're sort of on the surface, and they consider themselves middle of the roaders, you know, fence sitters even. And there's almost a there's almost a sense of pride in not overcommitting one side to the next. You have the sense of objectivity. Like, I'm the impartial one. I'm not really on anybody's side. What happens, though, in the middle of the road?
Some time or another, you have to get off the fence.
Well, those who stay too long in the middle of the road tend to get hit by cars. Okay? And those who sit on the fence too long,
they fall off.
Might get a picket up the rear end. So there is something to be said to committing at some point, where Jesus himself says, would you have been hot or cold? But you were lukewarm, so I have spit you out of my mouth.
Vomited you from my mouth.
Yeah. So, anyway, let's get back to this. The three voices are trying to debate what to do. Caspian wakes up enough to say, do to me whatever you want, just please take care of my poor horse. And they said, he's already long gone. What was important about Caspian talking about his horse, just in a general sense? I think
he's on the horse, or did he have the wall?
I think it was probably on him.
Yeah.
But I think they communicated something.
The what do you call them? True, whatever he belonged to. They hunted the wild beasts.
Okay.
And that, I mean, they mentioned that.
Yes.
And then the fact that his concern for his horse may have turned them around.
I think that was actually a very telling statement. But the very first thing he's worried about is not himself, but the animal. And I think that cracked the door open just a little bit, that this guy might be okay. You know, first impressions can be very important. And I think, maybe even inadvertently, I don't think that was the purpose of Caspian, but something about his character slipped through, that it was concerned for others. As he was waiting, you know, let's imagine for a second that this is Myraz, who has been knocked unconscious. They don't know it's Myraz, but it is. And he begins to come to, and he hears these three voices arguing about should they kill him or not. And he wakes up enough to respond. How would Myraz respond, do you think?
Kill him.
He tried to convince him not to kill him.
Maybe, or I kind of don't... and maybe this is because I've read the book before, but also the little that we do know about Myraz, you know, he's had his own brother murdered. He's got rid of all these nobles, very, very political. So maybe he's going to con them, or maybe he would get up and you know, you want to kill me, I'm going to kill you. I mean, he would be the sort who would maybe try to bully or threaten them.
Yeah. Or he'd say, I'm not Myraz. That's
some other guy, yeah. But the response would be very self-serving. Either self-serving to protect myself or to threaten you. And Caspian reveals something about his character. Because he's interested, he's not about self-preservation. But he's got genuine compassion. So he is super excited because these are real and true Narnians. These are real dwarfs that are only vaguely reminiscent of Dr. Cornelius, but this is the real deal, and they're kind of wild and crazy, and it's unlike anything he's ever seen. There's a badger who clearly is intelligent. He's putting together who is who and, you know, what's all happened. He is able to introduce himself, and what are the three reactions? Remember, we've got three different types of people here, the utilitarian, the pragmatist, and the one who is faithful. How do they all respond when they find out who he is? Okay, the utilitarian, Nicobrick, says...
I don't remember what he says, but he doesn't any longer want to kill him. But
yeah! Nekabrick immediately goes for his sword.
Yeah.
Immediately. Because remember, what's the most important thing to Nekabrick?
Oh, survive.
Destroy.
Yeah, but to survive himself.
His most important thing is to destroy these interlopers who have stolen from us.
But didn't he, maybe it wasn't yet, did he kind of back off of that?
He does back off.
Yeah,
he does back off. But it takes the others to kind of talk him down. But his immediate snap response was, I knew we should have killed him. Okay? So, the pragmatist, Trumpkin, has kind of a wait and see. What about the faithful one, Truffle Hunter?
He's going to take him and introduce him to everybody.
Yeah, he says that something good's going to come out of this, so...
You mean you don't want to give the country to humans, he said, too.
Yeah. He's basically open, and once he figures out who Caspian is, he's also the first to acknowledge him as king.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Truffle Hunter, a badger of all people or things, be interested in a human king? Why not an animal king?
We beasts remember, even if dwarfs forget, that Narnia was never right except when a son of Adam was king.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
So kind of like that prophecy from the last book about when Adam's flesh and Adam's bone sits on Kir Perival's throne, you know, that they were waiting for humans to occupy so the White Witch would be defeated. Truffle Hunter believes that there is something about humanity that is properly in leadership of Narnia. That doesn't mean he wants people everywhere. It doesn't mean he wants to give Narnia to people. But he believes that there ought to be a human king or queen. Is he able to convince the others? Yeah, I think so. And even if the dwarves aren't super excited about it, they at least see potential in this idea. You know, something could happen from this. So they start going around and they start meeting people. So what happens at these meetings?
Well, mostly they'll tell them they're going to have a get together.
They all love Caspian.
Okay, Caspian is making a very good impression, and Caspian is seeing that old Narnia isn't quite as dead as everyone expected.
No.
And who is he meeting? I mean, it's not just one or two people, but
all kinds of animals.
Talking
animals.
Yeah, he's met talking animals like the three bulgy bears. He's met a talking talking rabbit. He's met a talking squirrel who's spread the word like you would assume a squirrel might. The talking mice.
And
he's met fawns, he's met a centaur.
A centaur. Yeah.
He's met some dwarves.
Yes.
What were the dwarves like?
Were they the Smiths?
Yes, the Smiths.
Seven brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't they the ones giving him gifts?
Yes, they gave him mail and a sword and stuff.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
seem, you know, a little more pragmatic,
yeah.
kind of like Trumpkin. They don't seem as bitter as Nekabrick, but they seem, you know, more kind of, well, okay, we'll see if this works out, but you know they're willing to cooperate, but it takes a little doing, and that just might be a temperamental thing. These animals, and this is something worth noting, and it will be, we don't meet as many animals personally in the first book. The only talking animal we spend a lot of time with are the beavers.
Yeah.
This book, we will meet more animals and spend more time with them. And one of the things that I think you'll find, which is always very clear, is that they are not humans. They are talking, intelligent, rational animals. And there's something about their character and quality that is never removed from their animal nature. So Pattertwig, the squirrel, chitter-chatters and talks quickly. And is the one chosen to go spread the word.
Oh yeah, because he
and,
from
and the bulgy bears are kind of sleepy.
Oh, yeah.
And they're you know, and you go,
takes a while.
So there, within each of these animals, there's that animal quality that just that will always shine forth. They're never just people who have fur on. They are always rational, intelligent, but animals, like the animal is. What's in the nature of the badger, Truffle Hunter? He even says this. The badgers are faithful and true. Animals in general, the badgers especially. What do you know about badgers?
Not a thing.
Now badgers, live in, you know, dens and stuff, and they are known as being relatively shy, but when cornered, incredible fighters.
They are
absolutely resolute. And there is something about them, they never quit. As a matter of fact, we've borrowed that description in our English word. What does it mean to badger someone?
To keep on irritating them.
Not just irritate them one time, but to like keep at it. So within the nature of a badger is this never quit attitude. And the never quit attitude for a Truffle Hunter is, we remember. We badgers don't forget. We are resolute and faithful no matter what. And I just think that's a neat way that the character of the animal will always be present.
What was the significance of every group that he met? Toward the end, they give him a gift of food. Why was that?
Maybe because he's on a journey.
I just wondered if it was that it's a gift of acceptance and it really doesn't have any deep meaning, but
I tend to agree with you that the principle of hospitality is caring for someone, usually through shelter and through food.
And it's a statement of support.
It's a statement of support. And each of the foods are related not to Caspian, but to the animal. What does a squirrel give to Caspian?
A nut.
So nuts are very important to squirrels.
But the bears, they gave him
honey. The bears give him honey.
And they didn't have any bread.
So, I mean, it's kind of a mess, but it would be impolite. So if you have ever, say, traveled overseas or someplace like that, you know, gone to someplace completely unfamiliar, when people are hospitable to you and they bring you their local food,
you eat it.
Why? It looks weird and gross. Why would you eat it?
Because you don't want to offend.
Our food is like an extension of us. And for us to give you this is this precious welcome of giving you something of ours. Giving you not just something that belongs to us, but it's like a part of us.
We're sharing
that with you, and you receive it, and you are, you know, we're now together because you've received it. I give to you, you receive, and now we're together. This is a little bit unrelated, but I just love this quote. I believe it's Louis L'Amour, the Western writer, and he said, something along the lines of, if a man can dispense with speaking except for two things, it should be, he should be able to say, I love you, and please feed me. And he said, if you have to dispense, if you have to dispense with one of the two, he says, by all means, dispense with the latter and not the former. For if you tell a woman that you love her, certainly she will feed you. So anyway, I think the animals are, you know, they are, this is showing care. And it's showing connection to give them the food. I think you're right that there is maybe not a super deep significance, but it's highlighted for a reason. this is first started off as kind of a romp, and then like this little amazing journey. But meeting the centaurs at the end have changed things. What has changed in the meeting of the centaurs?
Instead of it being just calling everybody together for a party, we need to talk about war.
Yes, this will be a council of war. The centaurs are very serious-minded. The centaurs are very sensitive to the signs and the portents and the, all the things that say, this is what's really happening. And they see the coming of a human king who was willing to oppose King Myrads as the start of war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is where, so we're not, we don't need to get together just to hang out and to remember the old days, but we are going to get together and we are going to plan for victory. And suddenly it's just kind of, it's almost like it's not even occurred to them. And it's not that they never thought about it, but it's, been this sort of very, very distant, vague dream. But the centaurs have kind of brought it right down to, okay, we're getting together, great. Let's start planning military strategy, and boom. So the purpose has suddenly started to crystallize.
Badger wants to wake up the trees. And
yeah.
Right. What's wrong? Why can't the trees come?
Because the Telemarines don't. They're afraid of the trees.
Yeah.
Basically, Truffle Hunter says it would be great if we could, but we know that we can't. Why not?
I don't know why.
Because the Telemarines came in and they began to fall the forests and defile streams.
Yes.
The Dryads and the Naiads have sunk into the deep sleep.
Right. When the Telemarines really destroyed and conquered, when they were victorious, the animals were driven into hiding or killed, and the trees basically went to sleep. And there seems to be no waking them. So it is beyond their power to wake up the trees, but boy, that sure would be helpful. Because the Telemarines
are afraid of them.
They would run screaming
if
these trees if these trees woke up. So he meets all these amazing creatures, especially the fawns, which are super cool, and it's like this great party, and he parties until he collapses and falls asleep. And when he wakes up, it's as though it were almost like a dream because everybody's gone. But was it a dream?
No.
There's footprints on the ground. This really happened.
Yeah.
But that's how life in secrecy works. They come out and then boom, they disappear. Mm-hmm. Because if they didn't disappear, they wouldn't be alive. Mm-hmm. If you ever go fishing or catch a big fish, that's a smart fish. Why? Because if he wasn't smart, he wouldn't have lived long enough to get big.
That's about true.
So their ability to disappear and leave almost no trace whatsoever, this is the only way they've been able to survive. It has been hundreds of years.
They've been hiding now.
And they've been hiding and they remain so. Okay, before we close it off, any other... of all of these little people we've met who have lived in hiding, any personalities stick out to you? We'll spend more time with more people in this book. If the first book was mostly about the Pevensey children, learning what they're like, their personalizing their character, this book, we're going to have a larger cast of characters that we spend time with. Yeah. We learn their personalities and their character. We've already got a few that are, their character is important to the story. Again, the first three, Truffle Hunter, Trumpkin, and Nicobrick, are representing these three streams of personality. But we've already got some kind of memorable figures who have like a little quirk to them that's worth remembering. The bulgy bears are so sleepy they're almost goofy. you pat her twig. You know, Glenstorm, the centaur, seems just very, you know, whoa, he, you know, this is very, very imposing, very impressive. And then, of course, there is Reepa Cheep, the chief mouse.
Yes.
Who's, you know, full of courtesy and courtliness and little rapiers and, you know, funny hats and stuff.
It reminds me, I mean, you've got to think about Rollins when you, the imagination of C.S. Lewis came before hers. I mean, that's what I loved about the first books that she wrote was how imaginative the names.
Harry Potter.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
How imaginative the
well,
names.
Well, she has acknowledged her debt to Lewis as far as loving those books as a child and you know, opening up that sense of imagination. And remember what I said, something in that first class as sort of an introduction. But this is important to both Lewis and Tolkien, the concept of baptizing the imagination. You know, re-enchant the world. The world, to pull back to the sermon at noon, the world is not just filled with prose. The world is filled with poetry. And if you're the sort of person who only sees prose, who only sees facts and figures, you're missing a whole dimension of what makes life rich and full and real.
Did you see the Channel 10 news last night?
No.
Okay. There's a new museum that's just opened in St. Petersburg. It's called Imagine, and it's not big. But it has to do with the beginnings of glass making, all the way through what they do, and the pieces that they showed. I can't wait to get to that.
I gotta say, you watch watching an artisan glassmaker is mesmerizing.
I know it is.
I mean, it's crazy to watch. You know, this old school glass blowing and
like
turning and
just plastic.
It's crazy.
The colors and the imagination that came in putting these things together. There's even a chair. A full chair, a done with blown glass.
That's just crazy stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah. If you go to West Virginia, you can visit to one after another.
From the beginning,
all right, so that sort of takes us to the end. Old Narnia is back in hiding, but it is alive. And we will look at chapters 7 and 8 next time.
Okay. There's a war on.
There will be soon.